What's up, everyone? You're listening to Faith in Films. I am your host, Brojo, being joined by a good friend, Vekkel. We're going to be talking about WandaVision. That's why my green screen in the back there is WandaVision. Hopefully, you guys are enjoying the show, Marvel's first original series. I guess if you're not counting the Netflix shows, then it's Marvel's first original series, at least the first one on Disney Plus. We're at episode 5, and this is going to be a full spoiler discussion from the start. In fact, we have an image where you can see sort of spoilers. And so, Vekkel, what did you think about the show?
Yeah, make sure you can hear me. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you.
Yeah, thanks for getting me on the show. I was really, really impressed with this episode. Just a lot of tiny little things that, I don't know. There's just so many little things going from the acting to the directing to the actual story itself. I mean, I all around enjoyed this whole series so far, including the very first two episodes. But this particular episode here, I think what I really enjoyed about it the most was the way how episodes 1 through 4 just came to full. You got a little bit of a better understanding of what was happening in the previous.
Right, and that's sort of one of the mysteries as you're watching. You're trying to see, and I'm thinking, how are they going to thread in all of the stories, and how are they going to explain? Because you don't want to get a sense that the show has a few filler episodes. Like, some people suspected that the first few episodes were sort of filler, and luckily they were not, because they seemed to be tying it. Yeah, I looked at a few, Vekkel, I looked at a lot of reviewers who thought that this was going to just be a sitcom the whole time, and that for some reason they didn't understand that this was going to be blowing up. Yeah, you look at people like Tyrone Magnus, who started telling people after episode 4, it's time to start watching the show again. And you're like, well, didn't you expect it to blow up like this, right? I mean, and it is blowing up. This episode for me, I thought it was an okay episode overall. I thought it was okay. I tend to be a little bit picky with the dialogue. Some of the dialogue for me doesn't work all the time. And some of the character decisions actually don't work all the time. And so I guess we can get into details about that. But overall, I thought it was okay. I preferred actually episode 4. I rewatched it home. So I really do prefer episode 4. I think what you're seeing for me, you're actually seeing you can actually see, okay, so I've been saying actually for a while that directing a movie and directing a TV show is different, because directing a TV show can be more challenging, because in one sense it can be easier because you can have self-contained stories in each individual episode, like the first two episodes of WandaVision, which, by the way, really talented. They happen to have two episodes of the first two episodes of the season, which were self-contained episodes that did not in any way require outside knowledge of the series, and yet they have it pushing and moving toward a certain direction. So there really is no wasted content at all in this show, which is really incredible, actually, because you would think with a show that has a story that's from point A to point B that it would seem better interwoven, but the first two episodes are written very well so that they could be standalone episodes. Like, you could actually get a CD and bring it over to someone's home, and they wouldn't even have to follow along for the rest of the show. Of course, we are following along, but I was making a comment about the writing in the episode, and I just find that the writing sometimes the actors don't all seem to be playing on the same scale, and they don't all seem to be acting on the same scale. And so it brings me to one of my criticisms, actually. When you see Wanda's transition, or if it is a transition, her evil seems to me too evil too soon. And so I really don't like that. I prefer episode 4, because her evil was sort of sinister. There was a real mystery behind it. She played it really well. It was this fine line of leave me alone versus whoa, what are you getting ready to do? And so I thought that was really well. Vekkel, what do you think?
I have a slightly different opinion about it. I think based off the way the first two episodes were directed and written, I think even with the revelation of what we see in episode 5, that there's still more to come. In fact, I don't know if I'm jumping the gun a little bit. I know we're going to talk about a lot of aspects to this episode, but in my opinion, based off of what I saw in episode 5, we're getting more and more information that there may be more to this situation than what meets the eye. For example, for those who are following the show, you are getting the impression that this thing that now identified as the Hex, which is this bubble in which Wanda has encased an entire town in New Jersey, is something that is created by her power and being harnessed by her power. But there's some hints, and some other commentators suggested this as well, that there may be more to this, meaning that there may be something external to Wanda's ability within this hex that is that's even outside of Wanda's control, you know. And we see some hint to that in episode 5. So I'm thinking what could be happening is that's when things get even a little bit more mysterious and a little bit confusing, because some parts we see some of the individuals within Westview seem to be under Wanda's control. They seem to be playing along, if you will, or they'd be totally oblivious as to what's going on, while you have a certain small handful of other people within this town who seem to have awareness of what's going on, and they can't really say anything, such as Herb and Agnes, the mailman in episode 4. You know, they're all giving Vision and the audience a hint that there's something going on and they know about it, but either they're afraid to talk about it or they're not able to at all. We don't know. We still don't know that.
Yeah, so, that's a great theory.
So when we see a little, this is just my opinion, when I see a little bit of it, a slight inconsistency within the acting, to me right now, because I have to watch the whole series in hindsight and see how the story unfolds, I personally, I'm not saying that it's wrong to not do this, but I personally am going to hold my thoughts on the acting until I see the whole thing. Because what I can see, what we could be bearing witness to is, and as we saw in episode 5, some people are under control, some are not. So because we're getting this hint that Wanda may not be totally in control of everything that's in this hex, there could be some contradicting things going on that are outside of her power, and kind of throws a lot of confusion towards the audience. So yeah,
one of the reasons I bring up the acting is because over a period of episodes, it does seem as though that the dialogue begins to fall apart. Like, it seems to become more expositional and less character moments that seem to really add to the weight of the story or seem to contribute. And I know that's going to happen when you have 9 episodes. You are going to have some filler dialogue, and I think that does happen. But if you look at, like, Agent Wu or Darcy, sometimes their dialogue is sort of a hit or miss for me. But you are touching on a really important point that... which is a question that I'm having. I'm thinking, why is it that some people seem to be working alongside Wanda, and some people are like Agnes seems to be afraid to talk about it in episode 3, but then she's not afraid in episode 5. It's almost as though there's like a pocket group of people being controlled, maybe by an outside force, who are encouraging Wanda and what she's doing, maybe to make the Avengers look bad or to do so. I don't know what the goal is, but it does look like there is this pocket group of things happening, because if you look at what Vision does to her, he uses the Mind Stone and suddenly he's able to tap into the real reality, which is interesting because that means he really has the Mind Stone, because that's the only way he could be able to do something like that. So there's quite a few interesting things there. What do you think?
Yeah, like I said, I really like the way this series is going so far. I mean, we didn't jump right into the action. You mentioned something earlier in your intro about people assuming that some of the episodes were filler episodes. I totally disagree with that because you would identify an episode to be a filler if you have a general idea of where the story is going as a whole. Like, for example, you got The Mandalorian, okay? Were there some episodes that felt like a filler? Yeah, in my opinion. But why did we feel that way? Because we, from the beginning, from the first episode, we have this idea where the story is going, that Mandalorian is on a journey to deliver the Baby Yoda to a Jedi, okay? And then there were some episodes in between that just felt like kind of thrown in. But with this story here, I don't think we feel that way yet, because it's a gradual
relation
of things to come. Remember, everybody was shocked by episodes 1 and 2. Like, okay, that's it. We're not going to see any action, no Wanda using her powers or anything like that. I mean, no superheroes, no Titans fighting each other using their powers. Nothing like that in episode 1 and 2. But for those who appreciate good storytelling, you can see the tension slightly starting to build up at the dinner scene in episode 1. And you're like, whoa, wait a minute, why did he act that way? Why did she do this? Why did he say that? You know, that kind of thing. And then slowly as you go from episode 2 to 4 to now 5, especially 5 now you kind of appreciate the buildup instead of just jumping right into the action and...
You definitely like to build up. We were talking about, you definitely want to earn action. Like, there are people that for some reason are action fiends. You're like, guys, there's been 10 years, 23 movies, 40 hours plus of action. I think that it's okay that we get 40 minutes in that 40 hour period where there's downtime with the Avengers. And I love downtime. In those personal moments that they have, where Wanda's at dinner or Vision's at work, you actually build an attachment to the characters, so that when there are stakes, you actually care. You like this is the most invested I've been in Wanda's characters out of all the MCU films, because they've given her so much time. In fact, she's now at this point has had more screen time than anyone else in the MCU. Mm-hmm. Another great thing about the show is, I'm just thinking about, they really are balancing Wanda and Vision, giving them both beautiful moments in the show. Like, we talk a lot about, we don't want it to become feminism, we don't want it to become female power, and they're not doing that. Like, it's just, she's powerful, she's strong, and she's doing a great job with her powers.
Yeah, I love that you brought that up, because again, we know that unfortunately a lot of studios in Hollywood are trying to implement this, force feed this feminist agenda down people's throats. We saw that heavily with, it's debated about whether or not it was pushed in Captain Marvel. They did take some scenes out so that it wouldn't feel too much like a Me Too movie. But anyway, when I watch this show, I have none of that in my mind at all. I do not see as Wanda as a, you know, superhero that's a female superhero. You know, I don't see that. I see her as a hero, an Avenger that just happens to be female, and that's it. You know, I can see this role being easily played by somebody of the opposite gender, you know. But I like that we have that it's Wanda and stuff. And I love the way Elizabeth Olsen is playing this role. I mean, she is becoming more and more creepy to me as the show progresses. We saw that in episode 4 when she's talking to Geraldine, now identified as Monica Rambeau. And that one scene where she tosses her through the wall and, you know, 40 miles out of New Jersey.
Really good scene. Shout out to New Jersey. Shout out to New Jersey. No more New York. They're moving over to New Jersey. You know what? Let me make a comment really quickly, because they did something in the show that, because this is a Christian podcast, I got to bring it up and beat them up for it. Vision is reading Darwin's theory to his kids. Okay, so let me recommend this to you guys. This book was a really good book. This is Theistic Evolution by Moreland and Meyer, Gauger, and Graham Grudem put this book together. And it's over 1,000 pages written by some of the best people you can have on this topic, from K. Scott Oliphant, the Dean of Faculty and Professor of Apologetics at Westminster. You have Michael Reeves, J.P. Moore. I mean, you really have pretty much everyone with all credentials. You have Wayne Grudem, who has PhD in New Testament, University of Cambridge, his DD in Westminster Theological Seminary. Everyone here is totally above and beyond qualified. I recommend this to you because this is really important to fight lies, even propagated in Marvel movies, where you have Marvel basically promoting Darwin's theory. I don't know if you noticed that, but they did do that, where he said, I guess reading Charles Darwin's theory of, and I went, okay, here we go. So why would you be reading that to your children in a show? So I did want to bring that up. Oh, your mic is muted. Go ahead. Uh-oh, your mic is muted. Uh-oh, mic is muted. There you go.
Okay, how about now?
I can hear you.
Okay. Yeah, personally, I agree with you. I could have been any book that he read. I don't know why it had to be... The only reason I can think of why they might have brought up the Charles Darwin and the evolution issue is because it could be, and again, this is just a little bit of conspiracy theory on my end. Let me get my tinfoil hat. I need a tinfoil hat here. Hold on a second. Okay. This is just me. It's my opinion. My opinion that the reason why he mentioned Charles Darwin and the evolution theory to his children is because this is a lead into the X-Men. That's what I think.
I see.
They talk a lot about, you know, evolution and stuff and exist, right? Because technically Wanda is an X-Men. I mean, well, she's a mutant, technically. She's a daughter of a mutant. So, but that's a whole other issue. Kevin Feige has been kind of quiet about the issue of the X-Men in the MCU. But we're getting there.
Yeah, but the beauty is the fact that, you know, okay, so that's a really good theory, because I'm looking at Screen Rant. They're talking about the fact that it could, you know, Darwin's descent of man. But I just thought that was so lame that they did that. You know, I understand she's a mutant, but... You know, this is, we could really say, you could easily say this is a result of the fall of man, mutated DNA, angels come. I mean, you could have taken so much biblical history, and of course they take the secular interpretation of those facts.
Yeah, yeah. And we all know what's coming up next. If they make any type of hints to anything scriptural, it'll be followed up by the appearance of a Catholic priest or something, you know, because... That's the way Hollywood thinks. Hollywood's favorite Christians are Catholics. So.
Well, you're right, and of course you'll have the hero who's totally afraid of the Catholic. There's some closet homosexual. They'll have something where they're afraid of the priest hitting them with the Bible. So that, as you're right, that's totally what they do in the show.
They'll have the Catholic priest compromise the faith in some way, shape, or form.
Oh, right.
They did that in Daredevil, and they did that in The Boys,
which was, you know, they always have some Christian. They never have a Christian that, I mean, they used to in the 90s. You could have Christians who were actually Christians. Now you have Christians, even Daredevil. Okay, Daredevil's not a Christian. You can't be vigilante and beating. I mean, so like even the way they portray Christians are really these really broken, raggedy sort of. And of course, Christians are broken. We are sinners. We are saints redeemed by God's grace, right? I mean, we are saved by faith, right? So that aspect is true, that we are going to have moral failings. But the way that they demonstrate Christians are like, whoa, either they're extremely messed up, always in conflict. But yeah, that's absolutely right. So what were some of those small nuggets that you were actually like, you said there were really good choices in the show that you really liked?
Yeah, I'm a man of simplicity. I like little things that I would think a lot of people might not even notice, or maybe not even care about, because a lot of people care about like the more noticeable stuff. But I pay attention to like little noticeable things, like for example, when Agnes walks into the room, she walks into the into their house, and you see you see Vision's like just finishing transforming into his humanoid shape, you know.
You start to see pieces of that thread unravel, because she's not even being conscious of some of the stuff that they talked about in episode one. So yeah, big, really, really big, big stuff there.
Definitely got to talk about that part too.
You mean the green screen back here? That awesome encounter that they had on screen? Oh man.
Well, no, not that part, but just Agnes herself. You know, just like. Oh, right. Bring, you know, the relationship between Agnes and Wanda, like, what the heck, didn't Agnes just see all that, you know? So we're gonna talk about that too, but
everyone's so weird, even the mailman, but keep going, sir.
And the fact that I like that the forgot her line or something like that, or there was a when it was time for her to look at the babies.
Oh, right. She said, you want to take that again?
And she said, you want to take that again? And there's this...
But she looked with such a look of confusion that you really don't know why she said that. She's like, do you want to take that? She goes, and I love that Wanda looks at Vision as a form of like trying to... You're basically like, what's happening? You know, faking, trying to outfake Vision. Oh, man, which leads... to this incredible confrontation that they have in the kitchen, where he is not having her excuses, he is not having some of the stuff that she's talking about, and I just loved how direct Paul Bettany. Right. I didn't know this. Paul Bettany really is a great actor in this role.
Yes, he is.
Just, oh man.
Yes, he is. And that was the other thing too, the scene where they had the argument, which is probably the highlight of the entire episode, in my opinion. The other scene was. We're going to talk about that too. But my favorite part out of the entire episode is the scene where they're having this discussion, they're arguing. And my favorite part out of that was the fact that Wanda just flat out lied. She flat out lied about, like, directly in his face, to his face. And I love that. I don't know why. I found that very, very appealing. I mean, obviously, it's not good to lie. Obviously, you know, it's against the, contrary to the ninth commandments, contrary to God's nature, contrary to his commandments, his laws. So obviously, that's a bad thing. But this is a story. This is, we're telling a story here about a flawed character. And I like that they put that aspect of Wanda in that scene. She has the ability to alter reality so that she doesn't have to lie. But it's showing indication here. The fact that she did lie shows indication that she's losing control of whatever this is that's going on in this hex. So when Vision confronts her, she like lies at least two or three times in the whole conversation. And Vision gets angry. He knows that she's lying. And even after he calms down, she still tells another lie. She lies again, but he doesn't yell at her.
But some people are thinking about that. Some people are thinking that lie, what's her telling the truth when you have that mystery knocker at the door? Now, I don't buy that. I think she is lying. and she's trying to fool him. And I just, man, just this scene where they both get up and he starts in the air. Oh, I was like, man, I would love to see him fight right now. Because yeah, yeah. What she's doing really is wrong. But I love that he's saying that she's wrong, but he's not, he's sort of sympathetic toward what's happening. Like, he's like, Wanda, what you're doing is wrong. And I just love the way he says
it because
you know, you kind of feel for her, but you're like, you like can't do this. You know, she can't put people under mind control. And another thing we learned is they're actually suffering. It's not that these are just illusions or they're under spell. There's like a sense of pain that she has them under.
Right, right. But at least now we know that Vision has the ability to release these people. So, because you know, by the interaction with Norm, but that was my favorite moment in the whole episode was just the argument there. And again, you were talking about, you know, building a relationship with the characters. I think that's one of the main reasons why a lot of people love movies like, for example, Rocky. I always bring up Rocky whenever I talk about, you know, characters that the audience love. When you watch the first Rocky, it is kind of slow. It is kind of like, okay, he doesn't really get into any fights until
that's true
later on in the last act of the film. But then Rocky II comes out, and everybody loves Rocky by this time. They're rooting for Rocky. Rocky III comes out, they're rooting for Rocky even more. Rocky IV comes out, they're rooting for, you know. And why is that? Because people build a relationship with him in the first movie.
Right.
And I think that's why it was so important for people to build a relationship with Wanda and Vision in episodes 1 and 2. So that by the time we get to episodes 4 and 5, there is something that we have a greater reverence towards Wanda because we've seen how powerful she is, but we also at the same time feel sympathy for her. We feel sorry for her. We now know why she's doing this, why it's happening. You know, she's doing this because she's disturbed by the loss of her love, Vision.
Yeah. Yeah.
Vision, now he still doesn't quite know what's going on. He just knows that something is off and that people are being controlled. But he at least from what I'm gathering, he still doesn't know 100% what's going on.
Right. It's interesting because you have that.
What happened before he got to Westview.
Right. That's interesting because you do have that line where he says, I don't know where, you know, what he kind of reveals, which now, looking back at episode 1, you understand, not just for comedic moments, when he says,
what is it that we do here?
Right. And you're thinking, why is he so, and I didn't think, but they're really tying that in. So he really does not know, because he just happened to appear in this random workplace, and they have no idea what they're doing there. Really good stuff there. Really, really good stuff there. Yeah. What do you think about? We didn't talk about the kids.
Okay.
And big feelings. What do you think about the kids?
I feel like I don't know enough about them. I just learned about the characters Wiccan and Speed just a month ago. You know, I never followed Wanda. I never followed Scarlet Witch and Vision in the comic books. So I didn't know that they had a relationship. I didn't know that alternate universe, that they had children, they had a family. In fact, in the actual comics, it wasn't Wanda that he had a relationship with. It was another woman that looked like Vision.
Right.
I don't know what type
of universe. Really good comic where Feige actually said that was part of the motivation for the show. If I could get that comic image up there, it was a really beautiful comic where you had the Visions. You know, sort of, which is, I don't know that Vision I think Vision still wore his Vision face. I think this is sort of an MCU thing where he puts on a human face, which is really smart. And it gives the actual actor time to have his real face on screen. And he does a great job in both cases. So yeah, really good stuff there. The kids for me, you know, the kid actors, I don't want to say I don't like it. I'm kind of like, I don't really want to. We'll see what they're going to do, because if they're Wanda's kids, they're going to age up and age up, and probably to the point where we're looking at future leads of the MCU. So we're going to see what's going to happen there, because I'm looking forward to Young Avengers. I love Young Avengers.
Yeah, that's I think you're right about that. Yeah, I've heard rumors about that too. That we're gonna have a new set of Avengers, and maybe
only way to do it.
Either a new set of Avengers or a reboot of some of the old Avengers or something like that.
Well, the only way to, and I think they're justifying doing, even though a lot of people don't want to see it because they're still attached to the old character, which I'm still attached, but the only way to keep it fresh is to recast. Not recast, bring in a new set of Avengers altogether. And I think not even just adults, but now make the, because they really haven't explored children. And so get us some good actors and let's see what they can do, because they have a new storylines, new threats, and they're going to have to face it. As long as they can do it successfully with strong actors, I'm for it. Don't give us, like, a teenage drama superhero film. That's not going to work for me. But if you can give us actors who can sort of play ball with a Chris Evans or Chris Hemsworth,
anything could work, as long as they got a good story. As long as you got a good story, and a good story is something that's it's going to take a while for a little bit of build up. You know, that's fine. Or you can have something that starts off really action-packed in the beginning, but as long as it's catching people's attention and it draws them to want to see more. You know, you were saying earlier that you're talking about just jumping in straight on to the action, so on and so forth. There's some genre of film that's made specifically to be like that. Like, for example, the Fast and the Furious franchise.
John Wick.
Yeah, John Wick. I mean, those movies are not meant to be Academy Award-winning material for, right? You know, good screenplay. They're meant to be eye candy for boys. You know, action-packed. You know, explosions. You know, hand-to-hand combat, car chases, stuff like that. You know. But you could probably do the same thing with the superhero film, but you wouldn't get a wider reach,
an
audience, if you didn't have storytelling as well.
Right, you're right, because they're reaching out to all groups of people with their storytelling, and I think you have this generation of MCU fans who are not a fan of this generation, you know, kind of changing up the story, and you're like, look, I want fresh stories, and they got to keep doing it over and over. We're going to have, shows where it's just action. We're going to have Falcon and the Winter Soldier, because they don't have any powers. And so we're going to have to see a lot of fight sequences, but people shouldn't be discouraged from seeing good storylines. Like, we're so, like, ADD that everything has to be given right now, action, jumping right out. Relax. They're going to have, this show, Paul Bettany says, has more action shots or visual shots than Endgame, and so we could really have these expansive last few episodes of just action mania, which I hope not, but definitely more action.
And yeah, go ahead.
Well, I was just gonna say I'm interested in unique usages of their powers, things that kind of make you go, huh? I didn't know they could do that. Wanda cooking food, and she kind of does a spell and the food burns, or it turns into eggs, or seeing Vision's face animate with a different, it's like, oh, I didn't see them use their powers like this. So unique things keep people interested, I think. You don't have to keep having these ridiculous set pieces, because I personally love superhero films. I get action fatigue. Not superhero fatigue. The only reason I get superhero fatigue is because of the action. And if you remember, older superhero films weren't these massive action set pieces that blew through the roof. When you had the Supermans, there was a lot of talking, a lot of story, with a few moments of good action, but it wasn't like where we have the digital effects today where you can fly 100,000 miles an hour and they're fighting back. You know, they really took their time with the stories. I mean, the first Superman movie, you have like an hour, a full hour of him just growing up as Superman.
Yeah.
You know, and so I think people need to get more storytelling like that.
Yeah, absolutely right. That's the reason why my mom reminded me when I got older that, do you remember at the end of the Superman film and that you, what you did? I was like, no, what did I do? She said, you cried when Superman waved goodbye. I said, why? She said, because you enjoyed the movie so much. Wow. And I'm wondering, it's because even as a child, you know, I enjoyed the movie so much because I grew up with Clark Kent. I watched him start as a baby and then grow up to be a little child. And then a teenager, and then him doing his first feat, so on and so forth. And then I developed a relationship with them, so much so that I actually cried at the end of the film when he was waving goodbye. I was like, oh man, he's gone away. And I think, I think that's exactly the formula that the writers of WandaVision is doing, that they're keeping the audience. Again, of course, you gotta develop a story first before you just jump into the action and you gotta keep.
And people. They did a great job. You know, this is you know, it's one thing if the first few episodes were lame. They were really well written, especially episode one. I mean, the actors were on their top game. You know, so I just don't understand the complaining. Again, we're going to have Loki, we're going to have Falcon and the Winter Soldier, we're going to have so many shows, we're going to Black Widow in, like, hopefully in 2 months, if, you know, we get that, you know, but...
I wanted to go, before I forget,
yeah,
we're talking about the way episodes one and two, you know, you kind of see the time going from the 50s up until to the 90s, I guess, and... one of my other favorite parts of episode 5 was the scene where Vision, right before they start arguing, it was the beginning of the argument, he asked Wanda a question. And instead of answering the question, she wanted to get away from answering the question. So she starts rolling the credits for the show.
Oh, I love that, right. Oh, that,
you know, that reminds me of, like, you know, I don't want to talk about it. Instead of saying I don't want to talk about it, the credits start rolling, you know, telling you, like, okay, cut the show, that's the end of the show,
right.
But it's rolling, they're still arguing.
You got to remember the line where he screams and he goes, you can't control me like you control them. And she goes, can't I? And she goes, I have enough of this. And she turns and then the credits start rolling. And you think she just trying to end the show. But what's amazing is not only are her powers not working on Vision, they're not working on her kids. So there's some limits to the scope of her power, which really makes you question how much control does she really have over this place?
And that's the other thing. Some other commentators are saying, or they're speculating that there's something bigger that's going on, that everything that's going on in this hex is not just Wanda, but it could be something or someone else. And maybe, just maybe, that person or thing could be none other than either Doctor Strange having some sort of connection to it, or maybe something else. Maybe, I don't know, I'm just speculating here. Maybe Galactus, maybe Doctor
Strange. Oh.
You know, I don't know. But
the Beyonder, you know, you have a bunch of characters who have simulated realities that people live in.
We know that Kevin Feige has a five-year plan, at least a five-year plan with what he wants to do with the next few Marvel MCU films.
Right.
So definitely going to make a connection between each film, even though they're going to be standalone, but they're going to be connected in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah, really fascinating stuff. Really fascinating stuff that he's building up another story. You're like, what
Exactly.
are they going to do? I mean, it's I'm really impressed with
That's the
Kevin
thing,
Feige.
right? A lot of people, including myself, I thought, okay, after Endgames, okay, I don't think I'm gonna be superhero movie fatigue, but I don't think there's gonna be anything as I don't think we're gonna have another buildup like Endgame, Infinity War, again. But I don't know, man. I'm starting to feel differently now, man, because now with these little shows coming out and the movies coming out, we haven't seen any new MCU films yet. But with just WandaVision now, I mean, this is kind of getting people more excited. We're getting that excitement back again for MCU films to be released.
Right.
You know, so, and it's because of the story, not so much the superheroes,
Right.
new powers and stuff. Of course, everybody
Right.
wants to see that, but it's the story. The story is
Yeah,
drawing
and
you.
I like that they have gradually started bending the rules of these characters' powers. Like you're getting characters who are far more powerful than they were previously in the MCU. And I like that they're doing that.
Like,
I like Well, Wanda's far more powerful than she was before. You know, they had the conversation that Captain Marvel almost stopped Thanos. But she's far more powerful there.
let's talk about that. Yeah.
What did you think about that?
All right. Yeah. That was one of the other things, too, that kind of drove my curiosity. Like, when I saw this scene, which I'm about to talk about now, I was just kind of like, and my friend Edwin was with me in my house. We were watching it. And when we saw the reaction of Monica Rambeau's face, I looked back
Oh,
at
I
her.
love
Like, because he said, Agent Wu said, no, actually, it was Captain Marvel almost beat her. And then you see Monica Rambeau's face kind of like,
that. Right, really well
like,
acted.
we actually rewound it twice just to really get a better, say, okay, make sure, first of all, did we see what we just saw? Okay, because WandaVision does do that sometimes. Like, for example, one scene where Vision was about to figure something out, and then all of a sudden it just cut, and then
Right.
you're like, whoa, what the heck was that? Was that a glitch from Disney Plus? Nope, it's the actual show. So we rewound it, and sure enough, Monica Rambeau's doing that face, almost like, okay, whatever, you know. Like, what was that? Because you don't see any beef with the young Monica Rambeau in Captain Marvel movie, you know? So leading
Oh,
on.
so that's an interesting theory. Okay, so I thought about that scene. My friend Justin. Okay, so maybe so then if you guys are seeing that, then that might be what's happening. He saw the same thing. He said, "Why did she make that face?" I thought the face she was making was sort of the ongoing gag. So she kind of made the face that like, oh, he has to have a one up kind of thing. When he said, when she says, well. No one even came close. And he goes, well, I'd argue Captain Marvel came pretty close. Which, by the way, how do they know that exactly? Who was recording inside of that fight? That who was getting
That's
close
right.
enough to
That
be
didn't happen
recorded?
on, did it?
No, it did not. Well, no, it did happen on Avengers Base. It did happen on Earth. But who
Wait,
was recording?
big battle?
Yeah, Thanos crashes into the Avengers building. It does. Yeah, that's after all the destruction of the building. It did happen on Earth. But what's fascinating to I think who recorded that? How did they get maybe they had body cams. Maybe they could tell me they had body cams on Spider-Man's
Blame
because how
it on
did they
Stark, man. Blame it on Stark.
Oh, he has tech. You're right. He has tech that they're able to see
Probably
that
had
Captain
a.
Marvel got close.
He
But yeah.
probably had an iPhone and drone or something like that.
It's a superhero show. I'll take any explanation that they give, but I do like those moments where the characters say things that kind of go, "How did you?" And then she says, "Unless the Thanos had called in the Blitz, they wouldn't have been able to stop her," which is true. She was really tearing him apart,
Yeah.
which was a power up that she had. Really interesting that they did that, but
That was
I
actually.
thought the face that she made was more so just kind of like, okay, like all right, I guess he has to make a comment about something. But
Oh yeah, and even at the fight between Thanos and Scarlet Witch. Oh man, I really love, that was one of my favorite moments in the whole movie. You know, it's just like, you took everything from me. I don't even know you, that you will. You know, I just love that. The way that the look that she had, I mean, just the way she moves her hands, you know, Elizabeth Olsen, she does such a good job. I gotta say this. Remember I was saying earlier about little, tiny little things that I really appreciate, that just really gets me. Like, for example, just the one scene where Rambo is flying the drone in the hex, and the hex is the drone is hovering over Wanda's house. Wanda steps outside, and she's looking at the drone, and Rambo is talking to her through the drone. And then you see from the drone's perspective, just Wanda looking at the camera. And the camera just stays on her, and then slowly her eyes just start to turn red. Like that, just little moments like that just really freaked me out. Like when you see her eyes turn red, that means watch out, she's about to do something. You know? It cuts away to them having a discussion, then it cuts back to her still looking at the camera, still with the red eyes, and then all of a sudden, the camera goes off.
All right, let me give a criticism to that scene. I would have shot that scene differently. I would have shot it to where she was still maintaining her innocence, and she says to the kid something like, look out! Then she pushes them out and kind of tries to stop it, and then says, someone's attacking our home. You know, she's still going along with this idea that she doesn't know what's happening. I thought that having her walk out full evils, full, was to me, was too dark too soon. I really wanted them to save that. I know that we got to reveal it soon.
Her walking out of the hex, you mean?
Yeah, I really thought that she could have been a little bit more sinister, a little bit more mysterious. I don't like that straight path of good, evil, good, evil. You know, I really like it to be in between, and then over time, you're seeing things that are pushing her toward, you know, not even pushing toward, but you're subtly revealing something's wrong here. But I don't like it to look like, because we've seen this story so often with Jean Grey, and she started, you know, twice we've seen that. So I want them to stay as far as possible from away from that, because it gets a little cliche of mental breakdown and this power and this issue, and now she's full evil. I really like episode 4, where she looks at Geraldine or Monica Rambeau and says, you know, what are you doing in here? And she says, you know, we're in home and you're trespassing. And she, you know, hovered, and you're like, whoa, what is she getting ready? And she, you know, I found that more intimidating than her coming out fully with her dark black. So you're like, okay, tone it down a little bit in my mind.
I see what you mean. Yeah, I did like this scene where she walks out of the hex and she addresses Sword. Would I have directed it a little differently? I think I agree with you on that. Yeah, probably. Because I
it just wanted, seemed too dramatic. But yeah.
Yeah, it's hard to say because you want her to. I think what the writers are trying to go for with Wanda in this situation is that she's going through a major case of PTSD, okay? Because she lost vision. And I don't think we got a full grasp of that yet. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, no, we know what's in the hanks, we know what it is. We still don't have a full understanding of how it works, because we see apparently some of these things that are inside this hex, Wanda is not privy to. She lost some control. We saw this, a hint of it in episode 4. Remember when the mobile turned, burst into butterflies and stuff? She's like, oh, I didn't do that, or something like that. And the other thing, she was losing control with, you know, the stork coming to life. You know?
Wow, right.
Children aging right before everyone, in the face of everyone. you know, she can't control her vision. You know, so these are elements that, okay, she's created this hex, or at least so we think. But we're getting hints, again, like I said before, that she's not totally in control of everything going on in there. So either she's losing control, she's slowly waking up to out of this situation that she's in, done with her mind, or there's hint that there's something external to herself that's controlling.
Right. It could be either one of those two. And I just hope whatever it is.
I'll be right back.
So whatever it is, I just hope that the writers are able to convey this in a way where it's seamless. I really want the writers to get this. I want the pacing to be down on this. Give me 1 second, guys. You know, because the pacing for me is very, very, very important to what's happening here, because you want people to get the rush that she is a villain, but you at the same time want people to get subtle messages, you know, and how subtle is too subtle? Like when she comes out that field, I probably would have had her demonstrate the fullness of anger. Give me 1 second. Let me set this mic back up here. All right, 1 second. Yeah, I probably would not have had her do it the way that she did. When she came out, she sort of uses her power to mind possess everyone. I would have saved that. Like, that would have been a moment. Like, pull it back, get into, you know, give us more hints. Like, let her come out there. Cut the, you know, do something that, you know, it needs to be subtle. It can't, because we've spent time with her. And we're not going to believe so quickly that she's evil. At least I'm not. I need subtleties.
Well, it could be a number of reasons why they decided to go that route. I mean, because remember, this is not going to be a full, we don't know if there's going to be a season 2 or not. At least I haven't heard anything. Would I like to see a season 2? Yeah, based off of what I've seen so far, I wouldn't mind season 2. But also, we're not going to get a full-on 13 episode season. So, unless are we? I don't know. I heard that we're supposed to be getting 10 or something like that. So, and by the way, I thought it was supposed to be episodes 5 and 6 released this week, but I guess it wasn't. But yeah, so I'm thinking that because they're not going to do a whole full 13 episode series for this season. There's some things that they have to jump the gun on in order to kind of speed things up a little bit. Unless they're going to make the last episode, you know, pretty long. You know, but I agree with you. I kind of would have slowed it down just a little bit more and not have her come out with, would you still have directed her coming out of the hex and addressing Sword, but in a different
way? I think the whole scene was totally too fast. The whole scene was too fast. You know, I would have preferred someone else come out of that field. Here's a message from Wanda. Like it's not her yet, but it still is. I think that would have served as a better warning. You know, because it's still not her giving in to full evilness. It's sort of, I thought once she comes out, okay, let's say I have her come out of that hex and warn everybody. I then don't want her to possess everyone, have everyone turn the guns on her. It's like, a little bit too evil. Pull back some tape. You know, it's, you gotta keep the, you know, and I know the main thing that the writers are to do, like the, is to keep pacing. And like you said, you gotta be fair, they are trying to tell a, probably a story that could expand into a whole season, possibly 20 something episodes, and they're trying to condense it into 9, and they have many variables and things that they're trying to juggle here. And so, so that I understand, but I would not have directed her out of that if you know, and I wouldn't even have written it that way.
To their defense, though, I mean, you do have some elements that did kind of build up to that moment. Like, for example, in episode 2, she sees the drone, the red and yellow drone in her bushes, or whatever you want to call it. I guess we can call it a drone. It looked like a toy helicopter. We then see her interacting with Geraldine, kicking her out of the hex in episode 4. And then the third time we see them sending another drone through, you know, guided by Monica Rambeau. So these are all things that Wanda had experienced and observed herself with her own eyes. But then when she walks out of the hex and it addresses S.W.O.R.D., which just happens to be at nighttime all the time for some reason, you can say, okay, those three things kind of brought her to finally, you know what? I see what's going on now. I'm going to address these people, see what's happening, and tell them.
Can I just make a criticism? Let me just give a criticism. Two criticisms. So on to the directorial sort of what we would do if we were directing that. You're right. If you're going to sell she has PTSD, bipolarism, schizophrenia, have her come out at least, but show us that there's a mental paranoia, sort of something wrong with her. So she comes out with a genuine sense of, why are you doing this? Without, not threatening, comes out even with her clothes on, but that does she have any, and she's like, why are you doing that? We're they're kids, and, you know, give us a sense of, something's crazy. She's not getting this extent of what she's doing. Do it in a way where it's not so obvious when she's coming out like that. So, second thing about the writing, I don't like them calling it the Westview anomaly. That just strikes me as lazy comic book writing dialogue. Not when they're so meta. When you have the, because we know what's happening, okay? So you got it. You don't insult the, I feel like it insults the audience when the guy comes out and says, we're now looking at the Westview anomaly. And you're thinking like, okay, this is very insulting to the audience to a degree, because the dialogue is just so, if you've seen Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., the dialogue is so cheesy, that kind of dialogue. It takes WandaVision from feeling like a big movie into feeling like a TV show. It's not horrible, but I would just say, you know, we're observing what's going on in Westview. It seems to be, you know, you don't have to say Westview and not, because they're saying it as though it's a mystery, and that is what they're doing. But I feel like the audience is not that ignorant, you know. And so,
I'm still a little confused. So you're saying they should use a different term, or it should be
different term? Like, so let me say why the
because like what term, else? We
it's kind of a nitpick, but it's almost like, for example, mutants. Is X-Men. They call them mutants. Right. The Flash, they call them what?
Metahumans, right.
Metahumans. In Avengers, they call them enhanced. I actually prefer enhanced humans. Because they're trying to find a way to say try to say super level humans without saying superhero and sort of sound kind of, cheesy. So when you say the Westview anomaly, it just seems too pretentious. Like, bring it down, you know, and give it, you know, like that. That's just what I mean by some of the writing, and that's not a criticism of just that line, but how I see the writing overall becoming over the, you know, some of the episodes, especially the last two episodes, when they come into the real world and you have some of that throwaway dialogue. Again, not a huge complaint. I still like the show, but I could do without that, is what I'm saying.
I see what you're saying. Right. There was one other thing I wanted to address too. It escapes me right now. But
well, let's talk about obviously the big reveal. We got to talk about the big reveal.
The big reveal.
Who's at the door? Who's knocking at the door?
Uh-oh. Are you there?
I'm here. Who do we see knocking at the door? We see Peter from the X-Men movies. Right. I hate it. People, you know, my friend even says Pietro. He puts the accent on it. By the way, she has her accent when she comes out.
Yeah.
And I like that. I'm like, okay, you can't get rid of the accent. So she actually comes out with the full accent. And so that's pretty cool. But Pietro is outside. But we have a bootleg, spin-off, knockoff Pietro.
Now, outside. I disagree.
Well, I don't think he's not good.
You're a big fan of the Age of Ultron movie. That's why. Me personally, I was hoping that we would see this version of Pietro.
You weren't hoping that. No, you were not.
No. But maybe it's only because maybe I like him better because I've seen him in two films. You know, we've seen his character in two films as opposed to the other one. We've only seen him in one.
Right. Right. Interesting. Because what does Darcy say? Darcy said,
okay, why did he go that route?
Right. Well. Okay. So that's my question. So Darcy says, did she just recast Pietro?
Right.
So what that does tell you is they recognize that there's a different actor on screen. I don't know if that now it could be one or two things. One, that's a multiverse reference. Could be that there's someone pretending to be that version of Pietro and her brother is still dead so she couldn't resurrect him. Or that could be kind of like what they did with Iron Man 2 where Rhodey comes in and they say he had plastic surgery and he looks totally different. So it could be a way to rewrite history. I don't mind the X-Men version of Quicksilver. So I say bootleg, I just mean that's not the one I wanted back. And I like Aaron Taylor Johnson. But I'm fine with this one as well. Okay. And I actually think their siblinghood looks even closer, actually. They look like you believe them being siblings a little bit more. So, hey, maybe you had a case of, you know, Kevin Feige really preferred this actor and he had the right to do it now. And he says, okay, we'll take him, you know. And, you know, that I hope we get, you know, because I actually rewinded it to the beginning. And I noticed we did not, when they were bringing up the twins, they did not show the twins. They only showed Wanda.
Yeah, that's right. You know. And so here's the other thing too. And maybe just a little bit of nitpicking, maybe. Looking things here, or maybe focusing too much of something that's not necessarily nuanced, but the language that she uses when she's talking about her brother to her two kids. The two kids are asking, oh, do you have a brother? And she says, yes, I have a brother. Okay, she doesn't speak in the past tense. Now, why does she use that type of language? Could be any number of reasons. Because we know in episode...
So weird, this show.
Yeah, in episode
because
3...
Because earlier on, she said she had.
Right, in episode 3, she said that she had a brother, right? And now here in episode 5, she's saying that she has a brother. She's speaking present tense, that he's still, as if he's still alive, because she does say that he's in a faraway place. Now...
I thought that was a way of explaining to kids... that he was dead without saying it.
Well, that's one way of looking at it. And that's why I'm saying it could, you know, maybe I could be just looking too much into something, you know, because we've seen people talk like this before, you know, especially when you're talking to kids who don't comprehend the concept of death yet, you know, so you'll try to use this type of language to try to not make people feel sad, but make them feel like they're somewhere else. So they're not totally gone, they're just somewhere else. You know, so that could be the language she was using there, or it could be part of the multiverse stuff that's happening there, maybe.
Yeah.
Because remember, when Quicksilver, the X-Men Quicksilver shows up. She has a look on her face like she didn't know who he was either. Or actually, no.
She looked shocked.
Vision didn't know who he was. Even though Pietro did fight alongside with Vision in Age of Ultron.
Right. That could be credited to the fact that, you know, Vision so does.
Why didn't Vision saw his face. Why didn't Vision know who he was?
Right. Yeah. So
why didn't Pietro know who he was, who Vision was?
Right. So I hope they give us two Quicksilvers, you know, because you do have, you know, episode 3, Geraldine says he was killed by Ultron, wasn't he? So she still recognizes the other one. I'm just hoping that we don't, I watched it with a friend yesterday. When that happened, it really, because remember, the X-Men films are not as popular as the Marvel films. It was, even though they were good, some of them were good, like the Days of Future Past was very good. They're not as popular. And so my friends, when they were watching and they saw the guy come out, you know, Evan Taylor or Evan Peters, they were shocked. They were like, who is that? Like, it pulled them out. And I had to say, from X-Men, Quicksilver from X-Men.
Right, so they haven't seen Apocalypse. They haven't seen
no, and hopefully they never see Apocalypse. Hopefully. You know, because those films are not as successful.
So let me get your take on it. Who do you think this is standing in the door? Who do you think?
Oh man, I've tried to stay away from rumors and theories. I'm hearing a lot about a character named Mephisto, which I'm going to have to look at and try to find a lot about myself. Maybe they'll throw a hook, and maybe it's the Beyonder who is in control of the universe. Either way, to be honest with you, I don't know exactly how I feel about this becoming a villain in control of everything. Okay, so we're in the same place, because some part of me says I like it, but then it makes everything else inconsequential, and then it kind of seems to scapegoat Wanda. So I'm like, if they can do it in a creative way, then do it. But if you can't, don't.
We can definitely walk away with the notion that either Wanda is in control of everything in this hex, but she's losing control, or she's only in control of a certain part of it.
No, that's absolutely right. That's absolutely a plausible theory.
And that's, see, again, that's another about the theories, is that we're still learning. Even though we've gotten this far with episode 5, there's still more to learn. We still don't know how did this all start. Like, remember, one of the things I accused her of lying about it at first, but now I'm beginning to wonder if I should recant. Like, for example, when she's arguing with Vision, she says, I don't even know how this all got started. Last night when I watched that episode, I said, right, that woman is lying. She's flat out just lied to him. But now I'm thinking about it, thinking about the way her kids just grew up in front of her, thinking about Pietro appearing at the door. She's obviously surprised by his appearance, and surprised by the appearance of Geraldine. But you know, the presence of Geraldine, like, wait a minute, you don't belong here. Okay, if she really is in that control of the area of the hex, then she should know who's coming in and coming out, right? Who's coming out of this hex, right? She should have knowledge of all those that are subject to this thing, to this hex. Oh, and again, talk about Herb and Agnes and even the mailman in episode 4. They are deemed to be separate from the other people, like, for example, at Vision's work, it's Vision's job. So you got those elements there that seem to give indication that either Wanda doesn't have full control of everything in the, or she is losing control of everything that's, and we're slowly seeing that this degradation of her power. I don't know. I have no idea. And I love that.
I don't know how they're going to do it, but I'm hoping however they do it, they can, they don't fall into cliche storytelling. I mean, I'm like, oh, please don't do this.
I know.
Lame thing of there's a villain behind it. Yeah.
That's why I love the scene when she was arguing with Vision and she was flat out lying.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't like, because what I was expecting something cliche too. I was expecting something like, look, I'm trying to do the right thing. I just lost control, you know, and you know, it's not like that. No, they got, at least from what my view, they got away from that stereotype, that cliche. It just made it that she's flat out lying. You know, when somebody's lying to you, they don't want to look you straight in the eye. They want to just kind of, you know, like Vickle, did you touch those cookies in the cookie jar? Listen, I don't want to talk about it. And that's the impression I got from WandaVision. The biggest hint to that was the credits just randomly rolling.
I love that.
She just pulled out the knife. You know what? That's the end of the show. Good night, everyone. You know.
That's amazing. She puts up credits in the show. And I love Vision says to her. He goes, why? So we can go to bed and watch TV that you can change everything.
Yep.
I just love it. And Paul Bettany, he's so frustrated.
Paul Bettany intimidated me in that scene, man. He intimidated me. I was scared. Yeah, I like the way he was like really yelling at her, like, whoa. Like he's really, and then when they were floating in the air, looking like they were getting ready to fight.
Oh, yeah, Wanda, I would have loved to have seen that.
Wanda took the words right out of my mouth. What did she say? She said to him, you have never spoken to me like this before. And I was thinking the same thing, like, whoa.
Right, yeah. That definitely was a very good scene. But I just love it. Ah, man. So those moments are very good. What do you think about the setting this takes place in? Is it the 80s or the 90s?
I'm going to say late 80s, early 90s.
Okay.
It would have been nice if they would have hinted more towards a Full House scene, since she is the sister of the Olsen twins. So, which I think they kind of hinted to that, but I felt
baby Vision, like right?
Growing Pains. It felt like more like a Growing Pains type of intro, you know. So I don't know. Yeah.
You had that scene, evil Vision. I mean, not evil Vision. Sorry, baby Vision, young Vision. Where you're thinking like,
yeah, none of that. Never.
Well, not right. That's how you know it's illusion.
He was
none
never
of that existed.
Yeah. that was the part that was making me laugh. Like, besides the pictures themselves looking funny, you know, a cute little baby Vision. The real funny part about all that was the fact that none of that existed. Right, it's all figment of Wanda just making it up. She's just telling out a flat out lie. Yeah. And that was, if people missed that, I didn't chuckle at that, then I don't know. But that in and of itself just shows right there. Again, it's just Wanda lying to herself that Vision is alive.
Yeah.
And that that they live in a perfect world. But it's not a perfect world because she has control of it, so.
Yeah. Yeah, another thing, you know, because the episode was, you know, for me again, I would give this a rating, 7 out of 10. Simply because of those criticisms that I have. I'm hoping, you know, look, I love the MCU. If not, I won't be super upset, but I want them to not fall into cliche storytelling. You know, figure out unique ways. And that's some of the issues of having to tell a story every year that you gotta, you know, sometimes you don't have enough time to flesh out and you gotta go with the best that you have. But I really want them to tell, I have to brainstorm ways that they can surprise me where I go, wow, that was really good. Because the first two episodes, they did it. The first two episodes, I was like, really? They're really doing this? And I just hope, you know, I want to see psychotic portrayed in such a way.
Yeah.
It's just not too subtle, but it clicks with everyone. There's something wrong, you know. But you know, when you study some of these mental disorders, people don't act fully out there like that. I mean, it's not fully. There's a line of ration. I mean, they always rationalize it to themselves. So we want to see, and I love the line where she says, "The vision, you know, you don't want to see what's out there." Because he's gonna probably die, which is gonna be interesting to see.
I think that's one of the reasons why movies like, for example, Brightburn. Brightburn?
Really good movie.
Yeah, Brightburn. That character intimidated me from the get-go because here you have an incredibly powerful character. He's unstoppable. And the movie ends on a very scary note. Like, you see images of him just causing destruction. And you have, you know, I mean, imagine you waking up one day and you seeing footage of this person flying around buildings, making buildings collapse, you know, killing people with lasers coming out of his eyes and stuff like that.
Right.
You know, you have no choice except, you know, Christ exists in this world, of course, so, you know, Christians don't have to worry about it. But outside of Christ, you know, you're going to be living in absolute terror of this being, because he can move fast. You know, he can do everything. You can't really stop him except for that one piece of metal that nobody's going to ever know about now. But here you have Wanda. I'm hoping this may make a lot of people upset, maybe some. But I think if you want to get outside of the cliche and tell me if you think differently or you disagree or whatever, the only way I see them getting out of the cliche is to make Wanda evil, or at least put her in a situation where she is totally succumbed to her loss of vision, and she can't be reasoned with. Maybe there's a point where she, her own power kind of causes her own self-deception, even makes it even worse, where she actually believes that the Avengers are her enemy. And maybe make it so that, not that she's hypnotized or anything like that, because that would be a cliche too. Oh, she's hitting like Hawkeye in the first event.
Right. It's a way to avoid them of any responsibility so you can use them later as a good guy.
I wouldn't want her to be, if I had a say in this production of this series, right, and she is to go that route, it would not be because she's hypnotized or she's something is inside of her making her do all this bad stuff. Nope. See, that's cliche. I would make it so that she is genuinely convinced that, or so that the audience is genuinely convinced, I should say, that she has turned evil.
Yeah, let me comment on that. I think that's a interesting theory. I personally am opposed to anything that makes her a villain without, and not because I'm opposed to her being a villain, but really because I would rather see Captain America a villain. I'd rather see Iron Man a villain, because I don't want that Jean Grey storyline. I'm trying to get away from Jean Grey. If you're gonna do it, we need a separate episode diving into Wanda's mind finally.
Yes, exactly.
What is going on? So when she, see, that episode really should come before this episode, because then when she comes out, you're still feeling for her. You know, you haven't forgotten some of the stuff. I think it's too much reliance in this case on the MCU. Now, I want them to really flesh out what led to her breaking into that facility. You know, like, what does she see? Like, I want to see, like, a sense of, like, Batman v Superman. Wow, a DC reference. Whoa. This is It's really incredible. Batman v Superman, where you have the Superman flying into, this was really clever, Superman flying into the building with Zod, and Batman is staring up, looking at that. And you can understand him thinking like, okay, this guy has to be said. So give us something where Wanda is witnessing, you know, replay scene, show us like her going to counseling, therapy, and it's just her just falling. And this takes a lot of acting. Her falling into a place of despair. And then one day she just gets up and goes in there and she just starts the show. You know, that would make me look at her as a villain, but I would still have compassion for her. I don't like that just hard, dark turn. I'm evil now.
Yeah, right.
Did you know what happened to the rest of her character? I mean, she was a character before, right? So how does she just become that evil? Like, you still have to have your character. Like people become evil, but they, you know, they've done a good job at always trying to give. No. I know you don't like this all the time, a villain having a justification. But when it's a villain that was a hero, I think you need to give us justification.
Yeah. I see what you're saying. Right. Would you be opposed to, I'm not even sure if I like this idea, but let me just ask you from your perspective. Would you be opposed to them implementing a scene or a sequence where she's addressing Sword or anybody that's outside of the Hex? And it's directed in such a way that from the perspective of Wanda, we see these people, Sword, as inherently evil and trying to kill them, but we're looking at that through Wanda's eyes, though. Would you be opposed to that?
Yeah, this is sort of what I'm saying about directing it in a way where I just don't want it to fall into cliche. That would even giving us her perspective, it has to be done. I really think for me, I'm always interested as a person. If you listen to my podcast, you'll listen to Made for Friendship. You'll listen to me review Why Are People Lazy, Instrument and the Redeemers. I'm always interested in like seeing the motives for a person acting a certain way before they just act that way. I'm always trying to get into the mind. Like I've met people who were psychopaths and I didn't even stop speaking to them because I wanted to feel what was making them click. Why were they so insane? You know, I'm always interested in the philosophy, which I know you were talking about looking for Batman. What really makes him tick to be like that? If they can get deep into Wanda's mind like that, I'm fine with it. Because you wouldn't see them as inherently evil, but you would see why she's opposing them so strongly.
Right. Don't just
give us a cliche scene where she goes, "They destroyed everything I have. I must destroy." That's lame. Because it's a cliche. But if you see her falling, even if you see her just going through kind of falling into sort of despair, falling into sort of a deep place of darkness where, you know, when you look at people with depression, people become suicidal, they become murderous, people become crazy. You know, you got to explain that kind of stuff.
Well, for right now, we don't get that impression that she's evil. At least I don't get that impression. So I am hearing that a lot of people saying, oh, is Wanda evil and stuff. I don't get that impression. I'm getting the impression right now it's kind of borderline on the cliche that we're talking about, avoiding, you know, which I hope they further develop it. I mean, if they're going to make her evil, again, I agree with you 110%. I want to see a little bit more development with her doing it. I don't want it to be cliche where she's justifying evil. You know, I'm doing this because they hit me and I'm hitting them back and stuff, you know. I want it to be that she genuinely, and I don't want it to be through hypnosis either. I want it to be, if they're going to make it evil, get out of the cliche and make her genuinely, like, evil. Now, if they're going to take maybe one or two episodes more to develop that, okay, great. But I want to see it on a genuine level. I don't want to see it. Because, and Brozo, you've seen the same type of movies I've seen. We've seen this a dozen times. Somebody, you know me, I hate that. I hate that cliche. You mentioned it already. where you got the bad guy who's not really a bad guy, he's just misunderstood, and then at the end you got one it's good in you. I know there's good in you. You just have
to read. Oh, see that, oh my gosh, that would be the worst way to end the show.
Yes.
So you made a great point about character development. And I want to stress, like, in addition to what you're saying, one of the reasons it's so important that she doesn't just go flat out evil, although we would like to see that, is because you really would be robbing the character. We spend a few movies with her, probably a total of 20 minutes total. We're getting our first exposure to her fully. I will not accept a full evil because we're starting to get to know this character. So I need, in this case, I do want it to be a subtle, I mean, she can still be opposing the good, but I want her motivation to be something really, you feel what she's going through. And the dialogue is gonna have to be rich dialogue. You need rich dialogue to kind of sell this kind of stuff because this is getting more complicated. I hope they can do it. You know, because like you said, it's bordering on sometimes cliche. I know the pacing is there, but that's, you know, I hate to say it, even though I love the first few episodes, if you want to tell this kind of story in this sort of way, you are going to have to cut off some of the sitcom aspects just for an episode to kind of dive into Wanda's psyche. What's wrong with her? We know what's wrong with her intellectually, but I want to see it happen. I want to see her trying to do good. I don't want to see like a stereotypical sort of Jean Grey sort of, oh, it's overtaking me. No. I don't want her to be overtaken. I want it to be a conscious decision, but it's after being so despondent, after just seeing, like the great line that she had, although I wish they showed, where she says, what else can you do for me? Or when she says, to the effect of when she said, well, what do you want, Wanda?
Right.
I have everything that I want. See, that was cheesy to me, that line. You know, so anyhow, I hope they can pull this
off. I'm curious. How would you have directed that scene then? You know, when she confronted, would you had her confront the sword at all? Or
I didn't like, okay, so back to the stereotype that you're talking about, oh, please don't do it, oh no, oh man, oh. No. That was essentially that scene where Monica goes up and says, Wanda, you have to know. That was basically that. It wasn't horrible, I'm not ripping it, but it was falling right into the grips of, we're saving you, Wanda. No. If we have to see the psyche before you save her. We need to see her get fixed before you save her.
Right.
You know, Winter Soldier worked not because we saw the psyche, although they did do that, but because it was such a long period of time, it allowed for that mystery. But for this character, I'm falling in love with this character. She's becoming one of my favorite female characters. And I have to say, female because she's not my favorite male character, but you know what? She's even one of my favorite characters, just generally. I want them to do justice to the storytelling. So would I have had her confront them? I would have her confront it, but I would have had her confronted, to be honest with you. I would have had her confronted, not sympathetic to Wanda. Not a jerk, but with a gun drawn, Wanda, we want to help you, you know, but I don't like that whole dropping the fence. Oh, I'm so weak. Wanda, I've made myself nothing to you. I'm so, you know, like that to me is the most cliche thing that you can do in storytelling, you know.
Right. Yeah, I hope.
Not weakly cliche. Take the shot. Oh, gosh. Could you get any more?
I have a feeling that Kevin Feige is so involved in each of these MCU projects that he's probably also the type of person who's going to try to get people away from the cliches too. I hope that
he's good at that. You know, Feige, listen, no one's perfect, but Feige loves that. He loves, you know, if you listen to his interview, I think with the Hollywood Reporter, he talks about the fact that, you know, he really wants to put characters in different situations and continually be evolving. And he didn't want the blip to be referenced continually like, you know, the Battle of New York, the Battle of New York, the Battle of New York. You know, he wants people to sort of move on. So he even gets a sense of you got to move that sort of thing. But I think this may be one of those things where you got to work with the best you can get for TV.
Right.
You know,
because he's starting a new, this sort of a new franchise or a new phase of the franchise, I guess. You gotta have some, you gotta have something different, gotta have something fresh, like you said before. And that means that we're gonna have to, you're gonna have to take some risks, you know. And some of these risks are, you know, they can turn into something positive, you know, meaning that the audience will be drawn more into it. Maybe some of them will be negative. I don't know. I'm thinking a risk in this case would be making, go ahead.
I was just saying, do it well, Marvel.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they've been doing, and again, I think I've shared this with you before, you know, kind of slightly changing topics a little bit. It's one of the frustrating things that I have with DC is that, you know, and I think I shared this with you before. I walked out of Endgame enjoying the film, but at the same time becoming increasingly frustrated with the DC films. I walked out of Endgame, oh man, great movie. But you know, but I was so mad at DC immediately afterwards. Because listen, I mean, they got so much potential to make really, really good
stuff. So much potential, yeah.
I mean, they got decent actors in there. It's just somebody's writing, somebody's directors, and I don't know what it is. I don't know what it is, man. I know I can blame Chris Terrio because both Batman vs. Superman as well as Justice League, they're terrible.
Yeah.
And Chris Terrio's both of those. So,
yeah. They got to get someone else, and they got to get Wise. They really need a Feige. You know, I would love for Kevin Feige to just give him a DC film. Just give him one or two. You know, Disney, let him do one or two. I mean, save DC. Although I love Wonder Woman. I didn't just love Wonder Woman. Okay, this is not even an understatement. Wonder Woman is, but let me show you something. Okay, Wonder Woman is one of my favorite DC, one of my favorite superhero movies, that Wonder Woman 84. Not the old one, the new one. Let me show you something.
I can't believe that you liked Wonder Woman the first one.
Let me, you know, hold on. Let me see if I can get that on here. Do you guys see that?
Yeah, we see that. Oh, wow, you got the popcorn cup.
That's right. Okay, this was a great, this was a great superhero movie. I love this superhero movie. So DC is surviving, and you got the Suicide Squad looking great. You got the Snyder Cut, by the way. We got a month away from the Snyder Cut. We're officially coming on the, a little over a month, and we'll be able to, with beautiful sound speaker and all, Oh man, with the room vibrating, the punch. Oh man, I hope it's good. I hope it was worth this. Come down here. We got enough vibration to go around. This is really beautiful, very beautiful. So, yeah, over. What would you rate this episode?
With 10 being excellent and 1 being just terrible, I'd probably give it an 8 or 9, in my opinion. Yeah, I mean, I have more criticism for the previous episode than I do for this one. The previous episode starts off with people just coming back from the blip. That's my cue. I probably have to get going soon. And I did like the way that scene was directed, with Monica Rambeau running through the hospital. People are just phasing back in while there's already people still there. And the reason why I didn't like it, because it seemed like nobody cared about these people coming back in. Like, if you imagine you walking down the street and then all of a sudden you just see stuff materializing in thin air, and then the stuff is coming together, and then it forms a human. Like, you're gonna be like, what the heck just happened? Where'd you come from? But we don't see any of those type of reactions at all in that scene. And I thought that was really,
right.
That was terrible. That was the worst.
Let me say about that scene just quickly that you do have to appreciate the fact that they gave it a shot. They gave it a shot. That they actually tried to explain. So I do like that scene. I love people running. She actually uppercuts the guy. You know, so that kind of stuff is good. Are there some things they could have done better? Like, this is where I said, this is that TV direction. This is where you start getting into TV directing, where you can't do everything as cinematically. You know, but for the most part, Marvel has done a far better job than The Mandalorian at feeling cinematic, in my opinion. Yeah, Mandalorian feels good. This feels very cinematic. Like, this really feels good, my opinion. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm enjoying it so far, man. I cannot wait. Because you know me, like I said before, I admitted this a year ago. The main reason I got Disney Plus is because of my anticipation of Winter Soldier and Falcon show.
Oh, we get that next month. I didn't even just did we get wait. Falcon and Winter Soldier, and we're also getting what? This is going to be an incredible month next month. Superhero film. Wow. And let's see which fans prefer. I guess we'll do, let's wrap up our thoughts. Overall, WandaVision, good episode. I would have do, obviously you can hear a lot of criticisms. You know, one could think about the way that I see that we criticize. We don't criticize with the intent to bash Marvel, but we're just saying, I think the criticisms come from the fact that we're hopeful. We like what they're doing, and we don't want them to fall into casual, you know, these cliche storylines that are just so lame to fall into.
Okay. Yeah. This is fun, and definitely look forward to doing more of these in the near future. Maybe we could do one next week.
Thank you guys so much for listening to Faith in Films, the only Christian podcast where you can get movies and faith. I was your host, Brojo, joined by Vekel. Vekel, where can people find you?
Just find me on YouTube. Vekel, the youtube.com/Vekel, I think it is. So real easy to find me, V-E-K-L. Look for this image here. You're looking for me.
Nice. All right, guys, thank you guys so much for listening. All right, I'm going to be editing that up. Okay, Vekel, this was pretty good. This was pretty cool.
Yeah, man, that was good. Let's do this again soon. Get more people involved. Sure.
Oh yeah, for sure. I was hoping Alec was going to be able to join us, but Alec had to work, so he wasn't able. He was really hoping to do it yesterday, but
I was dog tired, man, by the time I got home from dropping Edwin off. So
look, Vekel, I was thankful because I was dead myself. I was drop dead. Oh my goodness,
dog tired yourself, huh? Yeah, well, I'm gonna actually go watch the take care of my daughter while I'm gonna watch the episode again right now, as a matter of fact. So, yes, I really enjoyed it.
All right.
But all right, brothers.
It's still recording. I got to get this thing cut up. Okay. All right, Vekel.
All right, you take care, man.
All right, God bless you. Awesome.